Subject for today is the basis of spiritual life, and particularly given the situation everywhere in the world, in Auroville, I would especially dedicate it to the aspiration for unity, because that's so much needed. Mother says that we can accomplish anything if there is unity. Without unity, one cannot accomplish anything. And actually, if we look at the basis of spiritual life, we'll come to that point automatically and spontaneously. As someone has said, set the center right and everything will be right. So communities, world, nations go through a challenging time when individuals go through challenging time when they shift from the center, the true center. With us, we have to yet discover the true center. Most human beings have to still discover. And one has to get back to that. So with that background, what should be, we can visualize spiritual life like a yajna. And for a yajna, we have to first lay down the yajna vedi. The ground should be, what is the ground on which spiritual life stands? And that ground is faith. There is no beginning of any endeavor without faith. So the one of the things that took place in the previous century, the first half especially, we may use terms like modernism, but it robbed man of faith. And in the second half, it robbed him of reason. So we are in a situation where there is neither faith nor reason to help us. In a way, in the divine vision of things, it has its meaning, because our faith was small, narrow, limited to this or that belief, limited to this or that ideology, religion. So that faith has gone, and a deeper faith has to come up. And the basis of this deeper faith, or the deepest faith, is that with which humanity is instinct with this faith, that there is something much deeper, much higher than our human consciousness. And as long as we believe in the sufficiency of the intellect and the mind to solve our problems, we really speaking don't take a step ahead. Because the mind can take us in circles, debates, endless debates, discussions. It move around and around and around, and at the end keep coming closer and then deflect away. So at some point, this faith in spiritual life implies that there is something greater than the mind, without which there is no spiritual life to begin with. The faith that there is, the divine exists. Obviously, if there is no divine, spiritual life is not just hanging in the vacuum. The faith that not only the divine exists, but we can become one with the divine. There is something so beautiful, because if the divine exists and we have to only worship, pray, we cannot share his nature, we cannot discover, as it's called, as sayujya, union, samip, nearness to the divine, salokya, begin to live in the same, dwell in the same status as the divine, sadharma, our nature can be transformed into the nature of the divine. If this cannot happen, then obviously all the rest is simply meaningless. So faith that the divine exists, then faith that the divine has called us to the path. We may have come for different reasons outwardly, there may be situations, circumstances, but deep within, there is this deeper calling. It sustains us through the rigors of the journey. That's not me, but divine who has called us. So at the end of the day, he will carry us through. Because we may not know ourselves, we may look at ourselves, and people may look at ourselves, a bundle of difficulties, difficult person. But he who has called us knows us, and he will carry us. So faith that the divine exists, that he has called us, faith in our divine possibilities. So this faith is the firm ground, and the deeper, the wider, the stronger it is, the more beautiful the spiritual life develops. So this ground is so important. I was reading the other day with regard to the ashram, the trust deed. So the mother says something very interesting, long, long back. She says, this place, exact words I may not, but the only condition, she says, this place is meant for those who have faith in Shivabindra and the mother. Period. So rest continues later on. Faith is the foundation. If I don't have faith that there is something like a higher possibility, that there is the divine and he will take me through regardless of all my difficulties, then there is no yoga, because doubt, as he says, even how much ever we may try to satisfy doubt, the mind will spring up new things. And once the ground is cleaned and made, of course, the mother speaks of like the Nachiketa fire. These are three levels at which we have to lay the stones. So faith in the mind, faith in the vital, faith in the physical, but at least the central faith. In fact, the Gita goes on to say, whatever is man's faith, that he is and that he will end up becoming. Shobindra says, if I have faith that there is a possibility of healing spiritually, then I'll end up discovering the ways and means. So it's so important, this faith, the sure idea on which the mind dwells. So whenever there are difficulties, whenever there are challenges, one of the things that they do is they turn our mind away from this core and our whole focus goes on to all kinds of things. And I often use this little example that if I have to go to the ashram just from my room, just 3-4 minutes away, and many things may come in the way, even dogs may bark, people may distract me, I may have a phone call. But I must remember where I have to go. If I forget that and I get distracted into 100 things. And Shobindra says that difficulties, the strange part is, the more we think about it, the more it tends to increase. He speaks of it as subtle law of difficulties. So when there are difficulties, what should we do? Think more and more of the divine, because that's where the solution lies. The more we think of the difficulties, because the mind is now getting engaged in it. Recently, I was reading in the context of Orwell. Somebody wrote a book, The Utopia, Something Gone Wrong or something. I said, the person doesn't know. Utopia is not a ready-made thing. Utopia is to be developed. That's the beauty. There is nothing like a ready-made utopia that, oh, everything is wonderful, I walk in. It won't be worth it. Probably we won't even enjoy. Somebody picks me in a helicopter and puts me on a peak of the mountain, I'll get asphyxiated. That's not my utopia. So we have to keep on with this faith move. Faith is such a great armor, staff, the pilgrim staff in the darkness, the torch that shows us the way. And then once the Yajnavedi is ready to light up the fire, and that's the aspiration, the call for the yoga, because yoga is not a technique, methods, all this is... we may have all the techniques in the world, all the method, but if there is no aspiration, we get only that which we are, really seeking for. We may stand in front of the divine. Divine may even show us his glory, as he did to Duryodhan and his company. And they said, oh, he is a Mayavi. He is a magician. He is fooling us. That was Duryodhan's and everybody's response when Shri Krishna reveals his Vishwarup. But the same Shri Krishna, because Arjun has a seeking. See, there is a time when Arjun says, but who are you? I thought you are my friend. I've been putting my arms around your shoulders and walking, talking to you like a friend. Who really are you? Now you see, the seeking makes a difference. Now when Shri Krishna shows the Vishwarup, then Arjun simply says, all my doubts have vanished, nashto moha. And you tell me, command me, I am here to do thy will. So seeking, aspiration, longing, yearning, call by whatever name, the call for the yoga, all the same, if this aspiration is there, methods or no methods, one will go through. Because there is nothing like a hard and fixed method. Methods themselves evolve. At some point of time, one likes to hear certain bhajans. At another time, even bhajans become a distraction. prefers just a deep inner quietude, just doing nam jap. So it's such a wonderful thing, aspiration. This has to grow. Aspiration is the solution to every obstacle. I have often compare aspiration to Ganpati, who resolves all obstacles with the power of knowledge. So if aspiration rises and everything is put into it, even the most intractable difficulties of nature, instead of going into that state of, oh, I am unfit, oh, nothing can happen, if one puts in the fire of aspiration. In one of her talks, I think it is 51, the mother says, you know what happens, you people think that, you know, life is so difficult and you are so difficult and you are unfit and you cannot walk the path. Do you know why it is so that these difficulties mount? And then she gives a very amazing answer. She doesn't say, you people don't have the willpower and you people don't know what to do. You have not read nothing. She says, because you are hypnotized by your difficulties and you have forgotten the grace. What a wonderful. She says, I am ready to take you open to the grace. She says, you are hypnotized by your little or big difficulties and you have forgotten the grace. So if only we could trust. So at every step of the aspiration, the grace walks with us. This is the true journey of Nar Narayana or Arjuna and Krishna, that there is the seeking soul and the divine grace. Always they go together. And then, of course, the mother symbol gives us all that is required for the path. It's the basis of spiritual life. One of the things which is so important is equanimity. We can use the word endurance. It's a long journey. I mean, even I remember first time coming to Pondicherry and suddenly all very happy. Oh, Pondicherry, we are going. And you land up in Chennai, you don't understand the language. And suddenly somebody comes, picks up your baggage and you just don't have a clue. So you can't even bargain because he knows a different language or deliberately or whatever it is. Now you have no choice and he takes you to some bus. You have no clue and he puts it and charges you some money. Now you have no idea where you are going or being led. But see, this yoga is not a cakewalk and it's understandable. If it was a cakewalk, is it really worth doing it? I mean, in the sense that the greater we want to climb, the more we have to know to endure. That one of the most wonderful books I've read by the man who led the Antarctica mission, Shackleton, if I remember correctly, the ship named Endurance, it never reached Antarctica. That's the beauty. It was a failed endeavor. And yet Shackleton is known as the person, if people say if ever one has to take a lead from a captain, it should be him. The ship crashed on an iceberg. And how this man, the name of the ship was Endurance. His grandma had told, this is the name of the ship. And for 1.5 years, they remain stuck on a piece. It's a true story. Imagine everything is finished to eat. And how do they survive? And how they survive? And eventually, all of them come back. Nobody dies. So that's why it was endurance. So if we know to endure, and Mother gives great importance to these two things, endurance and faith, faith and endurance and faith, faith and endurance. It's a difficult journey. Let's not underestimate the whole effort. So it needs to endure. Many things will happen. And it's easy to speak about it, but when it actually comes, physical endurance, emotional endurance, because there is a great churning that happens, many things get displaced in nature. Intellectual endurance. We thought we had certain beliefs, conceptions about God, and they are shaken. At that time, faith. And one has to endure because new things will come. So endurance at several levels works. And then the other thing which is an important basis which goes along with it, because some people when they endure life, they become very rigid. It's not a stock-like endurance, plasticity. So that's where be like a river. Don't forget the goal. Goal is the sea. No human being is the goal. No, nothing else is the goal. Goal is the mother. So then what does the river do? It knows where it has to flow. If it comes across a boulder, it just flows. It just increases the current and takes it along. If it comes across a mountain it cannot cross, it just does a parikrama. It is impelled by its destiny. Two things it remembers, where it's coming from and where it has to go. The only two things we have to remember. We come from her, very beautiful lines in Savitri. Night is not our beginning nor our end. We have come to her from a supernal light. Why we have come into this lap of ignorance? From to sift an awakening to world pain. We have come from the light. By light we live and to the light we go. So that's plasticity. That we have to just know where we have to go. And all the things that individuals or groups, when they start throwing doubts about it cannot be, take it that just shut the eyes and ears that no, we have faith in Mother and Sri Aurobindo and they have said it, and it's in the logic of things. If divine is hidden in matter, matter has to be divinized. Today, tomorrow, one cycle, this stadia, that stadia, this planet, another planet, but this is what is going to be. And that fills the heart with so much joy and enthusiasm. So much of gratitude, because you know there is a goal worth living for, and youthfulness. People grow old when they start saying, you know, in our days it was like this. Always your past is always better. Youth is looks to the future, and there is one future for all of us, and it's that there will be the divine manifestation in matter. All else is not future, but events on the way, circumstances, situations, they will come and go. But as we have in Savitri, the road, the goal thou choosest are thy fate. So this is the plasticity required, where all else is not so important. But important thing is to know the goal, and then the nature has to flow along. Different things will come. Nothing should be fixed in that sense. And plasticity has another meaning: to obey the divine will. The divine impulsion within, that requires a lot of inner tuning. But one goes there by faith and takes the lead and moves. So plasticity, she gives a great example. Another importance, and other things she speaks of is widening. So all quarrels, we all live in a narrow cage. So that's our comfort zones of life. And whenever that cage opens, we are afraid. The cage opens because the bird should fly. See, when the cage opens, how much fear comes in. One step outward, two step backward. We are going to lose certain things. We are going to meet the unknown. See, unknown can be very frightening to some people. But unknown can be tremendously exciting. It's the adventure, great adventure of the unknown. That we do not know what's going to happen brings its own charm and joy. We don't know the future. And yet we have faith in it. Look at it. It's full of possibilities. We don't know which way these possibilities will manifest. So, wideness, not to limit oneself to one small little thought or way or conception of life. Because what is going to come is something so new. Something which our human minds, the wider the conception, and the widest conception is what? That matter will reveal the spirit which is hidden in it. There can be no wider conception than this, that well, this earth which we often just disregard as below our feet. You see, and this is the example which I always feel. This dust below our feet, when this dust goes below the feet of the divine, then it becomes chandan. You apply it. It all depends on how we look at it. Bhasma. We recently had Shivaratri, day before yesterday. So it's very interesting, these little rituals. In what does the bhasm signify? Is the dead body's ashes, insignificant. If you look at it like a person has died, lost. Now the ashes. But even these ashes, when they are offered to Shiva, they become prashad. So one, you know, applies it. Shiva uses only this. He doesn't want living beings, you know, because ego must die before one is a claimant. But even that becomes so special when it is offered at the feet of the Lord. So this enthusiasm that comes, and by widening oneself, and widening doesn't come through debates and discussions. That's the interesting part. Widening comes through an ascension of consciousness. As Mother says, you have to reach to that point where you are able to see. In fact, all conflicts come so that we can ascend to a new poise. In house also it applies. And two people are fighting. Human beings love quarreling. Pastime. No life without quarreling. If two people are living in a house and they don't quarrel for a few days, it's like, are you okay? Is everything fine? Do you have fever? Shall I take you to the doctor? It's a universal. As they say, you can't digest the food. But Mother says it's so sad. She says, I am surprised why people quarrel. We quarrel because we are narrow, and the narrower we are, the more we quarrel. So it works both ways. But the wider we get, we begin to understand things very differently. And let's take an example. One of the beautiful examples is compassion. See, Maheshwari is wideness and height, and she has the compassion. So when she sees human defects, difficulties, she doesn't just condemn a useless fellow. So as Shobindu says, that's why even her rejections are not rejections but postponements. And he goes on to say even the Asura and Rakshasa and Pishachas are her children. So when, you know, even Pishacha is talking about. So why? Because she sees behind all the appearance, outer appearance, something much deeper. That brings compassion. When somebody is angry, annoyed at us, even this about community living, one begins to see, well, he is bound by his own nature. It brings compassion. When the Gita says, Yantra Rudini Maya, one lady, Russian dancer, and in her old age, she was telling me just a few days before her death, she said, you know what, I want to share something very interesting with you. Okay, I thought she had probably seen a dream or interesting, something has happened. She said, I have forgiven my husband. Now, she was separated for last 30 years. So, I said, that's wonderful. I said, what is the basis of this? It's good, wonderful. She says, you know, I remembered suddenly phrase from Essays on the Gita. She didn't use the word Yantra Rodine Maya. He says, everybody is bound by his nature. I realized he was also bound by his nature. I said, that's wonderful revelation. After maybe a month or so, I don't remember. Very soon she died. So see, there is a forgiveness which is of the nature of, I am superior to you. That's really not forgiveness. It feeds our vanity. But there is another which comes from wideness. People struggle with their difficulties, everybody. And those who have struggled with their own difficulties understand the difficulties of others. As mother says, it brings benevolence, sunny tolerance. And it automatically brings compassion because everyone is struggling with their own challenges in life. So it's okay to understand this. So all these things make a very beautiful ground of spiritual blossoming. And that's the problem when people say that mother must give us techniques and methods. Only once she has given, when the disciple is asking, give us something, some method. He says, but Shurvinda has told you, I'll do it for you, turn to me, open to me. Hasn't he told you? At another place she says, when she was asked how the new creation will come into being, she says, hasn't he told you, it is written in secret of the Vedas that, you know, it is the tapas, the faith and the idea. But we want something like a technique to hold on to. It's a conversation in agenda where he says, but still mother, a method. People ask, some pranayam, some meditation, some technique you must give. So then she speaks about a japa. And the method is called the mother. So simple. If we want a method. You see, method is Shobindu speaks of, in synthesis of yoga, about the four aids. And these four aids, basically they come from Sanat Sujatyam, where these four aids are described. And these four aids we have to always remember is the fundamental basis of yoga. So he says the scripture, the Veda, which is seated in our heart, what helps in that is at least reading, connecting with Shurbinda and the mother through what they have given to us. This is a method. Very strange. How can this be a method? Mother goes on to say, if we do it sincerely, in quietude, she even says, don't try to understand. She says these words, which are capsules of consciousness, their consciousness, word body, they will create new brain cells for the understanding. When you read the word, they will create new brain cells. This is the power of these words. They are mantra. As when the mantra sings in yoga's ear, the words are mantra. So when we read these words, Shobindra and the mother, this is something which very often I find with the wide section of audience which I interact with, people don't read Shobindra and the mother. It may sound very strange. But it is so true. They read all kinds of books. Sometimes they hand over to me, oh, this author. I said, you know, after you have smelt Brahma Kamal, that applies to reading Madan and Sri Aurobindo, you know, every flower seems so scentless. So when you are exploring, it's fine. Not that one should not read anything, not like that. But then at least read Sri Aurobindo and the mother. This is our method and a wonderful method, because it what it does, it opens at one point of time the scripture, the Veda in the heart. It's not that intellectually one remembers a to-do series. Sri Aurobindo doesn't say that. He says to govern your life with a set of rules. He puts an exclamation mark. That's not the point. But it opens the door so many times, especially with Savitri. A line of Savitri springs up. And it's just the one which is needed. So reading Mother and Sri Aurobindo. So he says, speaks of one thing. Then second, very important. These are the indispensable basis of spiritual life. And that is the Guru, the Master. So always in the mother's symbol, this so beautiful, it teaches us, let the center be right, the center is mother. And I think sometimes we forget that. And there are several reasons or justifications that we forget it. It doesn't matter whether we see the mother's picture or not, but it refers to the mother. Sri Aurobindo is very clear on that, because she has got the mandate for transformation. So one is the world mother. Yes, we can remember the world mother. She will always protect her, protect us, give us many things. She can give us liberation, bandhan mukta. But transformation, the same divine mother, the supreme mother, has taken a certain form. So to keep the mother in the heart, there is a very beautiful line in Ramayana. When Hanuman is to enter into Lanka, so he is seeing what he should do, how he should go about it. He is going in the midst of danger, extreme danger. Though he is a ansha of Shiva, but Ravan is no ordinary fellow. There is a beautiful line, I'll say in Hindi, then repeat in English. Pravisi nagar ki je sab kaja. Hriday Rakhi Kaushalpur Raja. Go into the city. Enter the city. And do all that you are meant to do. And what all he does afterwards. And what is the one condition? He says, always keep the Kaushalpur Raja, Ram, embodied avatar. So beautiful the line is, in your heart. So all conflicts come because ego, I, my, mine, my way. Or no way, not even highway. That's at least okay. My way or highway is still okay. My way or no way, that of course is extreme. It is the ego which is the cause of all difficulties. And the simplest way of getting rid of the ego, because otherwise it's very complicated. When one tries to work on the ego hides behind the idea that I am working on my ego. As Sri Aurobindo says in one of his poems, he said, I am egoless, free. Then swore because his dinner was not ready. And then he says, are you so very sure that you are egoless free? Because he's swearing because the dinner is delayed or not ready. He says, yes, it's not me. It's my belly god that is hungry. See, ego can justify stark ambitions in 100 ways. Even one of the ways, mother's work. Now what do you say? Mother's work. So I have a little remedy for that. If one thinks one is doing mother's work, one has not begun. That's the first lesson given to Arjun. First practice of yoga, you are not the doer. This is a beautiful passage of Sri Aurobindo, the delight of works. First thing, I am not the doer. What does it mean? I'll let anything do and I'll say I am not the doer. No, it obviously, the problem with scriptures is that we can catch it in the right sense or we can invert it. So common. Devil quoting the scripture. Oh, I am not the doer. I'll kill somebody. I am not the doer. It doesn't mean that. Of course, one has to open either to lower nature or higher nature or the divine. But then this idea that I am the doer, this is, she says that the, Shubhinda says in Synthesis of Yoga, that the same consciousness which was becoming an instrument of the divine can be possessed by the titan. It can be so dangerous. So the fundamental requirement of yoga is humility. Humility before the divine. Whatever I may know, whatever I may do, I am nothing, I can do nothing. This prayer of the mother is so beautiful. I am nothing, I can do nothing. Thou alone art. To always have this humility is such a safety. And all this, when we have the embodied divine, we are so fortunate. So opening to the mother repeatedly from the people often, of course, Shubhinda's major works are there. And it's so beautiful. But well, one should read as a compliment the letters on yoga, because we see the whole refrain after the mother's permanent arrival is open to the mother, love the mother. Even he goes on to say, there is one very beautiful letter. He says, know that the mother loves you. Base your life on this one single truth and all will be well. He doesn't say that, know that you love the mother, because who can love the mother? We can't even love a human being, because we love only as long as the human being says, oh, you're so wonderful, so nice. One day if the human being says, you know what, there's a problem. Really? Then you start, you know, you are possessed, you are this, you are useless. Everything starts topsy-turvy. We don't know what is love, but mother loves us. Just to know that, it's so, we don't need anybody's approval, anybody's acknowledgement, because the mother loves us. And he says, if you base your life on this one single truth, she is all love. Whoever made her an embodiment of hard, strict, disciplinarian, punishing people, this is so, mother even cautions that there will be an effort to turn Shurbindo into a religion. And she speaks about an asura, the falsehood, which has assumed the form of Shurbindo. And what is he doing? What kind of religion? He's making a religion which is very hard, which is cruel. And then he says, everyone must know that this is not the truth of Shurbindo. The truth of Shurbindo is that he is great and benevolent and compassionate. He is all powerful, all merciful. So whoever tries to do that, we should know he has taken a different turn. It's so dangerous. That's not how Shurbindo and the mother have worked. So when we read their stories, my God, the disciple literally saying, oops, I did it again. And Shubhinda, okay, I need your blessings. I have again done it. Okay, my blessings. It goes on, telegrams after telegrams. And even they would seldom take the step of, you know, sending away people, throwing them out. They would not do that. Even there are disciples. And once Niruddha asked, why has he gone away? He says, but he is wanting to go away. He is wanting to go away. So Niruddha says, but there is grace. He says, yes, but he doesn't want to open to grace. Imagine what compassion. Because only the Almighty can have such compassion. So one should be so careful that, you know, not to turn it into a very narrow, strict religion. That's the way many things have happened. And the lines are very thin. See, the same religion has in its core a spiritual impulse, and the same religion can become a disaster to mankind. So it's so important what is our conception of Mother and Shurbindo. So it's okay that my guru is Mother and Shurbindo. I draw all inspiration from him, from them. But what is our conception of Mother and Shurbindo? Is our conception very small and narrow? Or our conception is very vast? One little story, another I remember, when a child was sent away from the school because of drugs and all this. And he went through a difficult time, and obviously eventually at 42 he developed cancer and died. We lost life, and his father suffered a lot. His father was sharing with this story with me when he was in 90s. And when his son died, he came back, and naturally I was a bit, you know, went to just not console, he was quite rooted within, but just to sort of share. He says, you know, I have now a smile. All my life I worried about this boy. But something happened which I want to share with you, which has put my heart to rest. So he said that he was in a rehab home and then he had developed cancer. So palliative care, all this was going on. He just called me and he said, Papa, I know that, you know, I have troubled you and everyone a lot. And, you know, in everybody's eye, I am a failure. And perhaps that is true, but I want to share with you only one thing which will make your day. And he said a very touching story that when he was leaving, the mother called him. And he told to this boy, she told to this boy, remember only two things. One is that don't hide anything from me. Don't hide anything from me. Second thing she tells is so touching. And remember that the mother always loves you. When he was narrating that story, I had literally tears in my eyes. Look at the human and the divine difference. Well, he has to be sent because he's into drugs in the school. So it's obviously. But look at the way divine is responding to this. What a height. What a magnanimity. What a power, I would say. Mother loves you. Remember, he says, all my life I have gone wayward, lost my way, and this is what has sustained me. And there was another man who told me something very similar because I had developed tobacco. He used to be drunkard and, you know, he would. There was a little interchange where I sort of don't come to dispensary in this state, you know. And he took a big grouse with me, so he would catch me on the way and start threatening me. And I would also say that, well, you know, all things happen. One day I saw him at the samadhi. And suddenly my heart says, see, if he can come to the mother, what is it that I am? The mother has taken him and he is, loves the mother. What is there to, you know, I left everything from my heart. Very beginning of coming here. Then next day he comes, strangely and paradoxically. And he tells me, I have forgotten all about, you know. It was so strange, as if it was connected. My sort of, whatever one may say, reprobation was feeding him. So I said, that's so wonderful. And I said, see, same here, same to same, same pinch. But, you know, the reason I told him that, you know, when I saw you yesterday, I just had this feeling, he loves the mother. So who am I to, you know, think anything more? Then he said something in his half-drunken state, which was like eye-opener to me. He just leans a little towards with all that smell coming out of his mouth. But that day I was in that utter tolerant state. He says, you know what? Who else is there to love? Who else is there to love? Because I mentioned that, you know, I saw that you have love for the mother. He says, who else is there to love? Then I realized how stupid or ignorant judgments can be. Who else is there to love? And everybody knew it. When he had a bad injury and people came and they said, you know, we know how he has behaved with you. I said, this is not important at all. In any case, you bring him along. Don't even think about it. Who else is there to love? So this is the our relation with the master. It's not just that, okay, they are my gurus or master. They are not just traditional masters who are showing us a way we have to practice it. They are not leaving us to the law of karma. Well, we can't help it. We are a guide sitting on the pulpit and we have told you. They are friends, they are counselors, mentors. As Aurobindo says, chasing away with her smile the clouds of gloom and doubt that assail the seeker. The mother says, I am with you, and when you jump into the sea, I don't stand on the shore and watch you, I plunge into it. To call them a master is to belittle them. The only word that comes is mother, mother, mother. Only mother can do it. Human mother to an extent, that scene in Bahubali, if you remember, that lady is drowning, but she holds. I'll drown, but my child, I will not let the child drown. That scene I remember so vividly. And I felt that's how a mother is, except that mother doesn't drown. She is the ocean. She is its fathomless depths. She is the vast sky of the ocean, vast blue sky, and she is everything, all that that is. So this is the third thing, and then second thing, and then she says aspiration, the utsah. It's no use, as he says, reading a teaching if you don't want to live it. The zealot of the disciple, he should know, you know, he should, when there is a difficulty, he must increase the aspiration, not let it be clouded. Often we let it get clouded. Instead, it should be increased aspiration. If such is the challenge, probably divine knows, he thinks I am worthy of it. So one increases the aspiration. And all clouds vanish. So that he gives very short, as if not much really depends on the disciple. And the fourth, he says, is time. Time is the instrument. One has to allow time. The greater the work, the more time it takes. So patience, perseverance are understood. Because the greater the endeavor, it's not a McDonald's that is, you know, cooking for us. We can pay $1,000 or $10 and get a nice hamburger. No. That kind of cheap stuff is not worth it. And there he mentions, not in synthesis but elsewhere about Sanat Sujat, he says, people want, we are coming back to that method, they want to do, the ego feels satisfied that so many pranayams I did today, so many asanas, so many kriyas. People want to, you know, the ego feels satisfied, now I deserve Mother's grace, and by default others, oh, they don't do anything, they don't meditate, they don't do, they're not worthy. You see, this is how it comes. The ego is taking the joy of doing something. So he says, this is not a yoga like that. Sit in the ship. The ship is Brahma Vidya, which is the scripture. Faith is the compass. It'll show you where to go. Keep it alive. Keep the compass active. Faith means mother. We have to go there. And the ship is moving. The ocean force is the divine shakti. That is the guarantee. It's not our fitness and unfitness, but the divine mother is the guarantee of the yoga. So the method is ma, 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 ma. Deep within. Constantly, whenever in any difficulty, any problem, any confusion, as he says, all is the divine. Just have that, bring that state. Whenever there is confusion, there is nothing else but the divine. We may not understand it now. It's the play of the divine in the great unfolding. He uses everything ultimately for his grand disclosure. So this is broadly speaking. There's so many other things which, you know, feel like sharing. But of course, the key ultimately is love and surrender. Yoga starts with surrender. It is supported by growing surrender, detailed surrender. And interestingly, with surrender comes sincerity. Because surrender means, I will now do your will. Otherwise, there is no surrender. I have surrendered to you, but I will live my own way. How can that be surrender? They are just fooling oneself, using a word. Surrender implies, I will do your will. Literally, it means, even if you surrender to a human being, after this, I will do my way. So, sincerity is precisely this, to organize one's life around the central goal. So, surrender and sincerity walk with us on the way. And the grand culmination is surrender. Not that I have become a yogi, superman, supramental being. Are my hairs turning blonde or red or white? No, white is okay. Golden. That's foolishness. That's a non-starter. As Shubhendu says, to become a yogi, tapasvi, superman is not the goal of the yoga. If one puts that goal, it means one was seized by an egoistic impulse of aggrandizing the ego. So what is the goal? To live in the divine, to live for the divine, to live by the divine. And that is the ultimate secret of yoga, to live for the mother, to live by the mother, to live in the mother. Thank you so much.